In your talk on the NBA marketing the minstrel show and serving the big gangsters, you talk about basketball and you get into coaching, the metaphor of coaching. And you're not against coaching, obviously, but you talked about coaches' ability to play an initiating role in terms of the productive forces that they are given in unleashing and freeing what was really positive in changing the game. Could you talk more about that?
Well, you know, there was this professor of mine back in college whom I mentioned in a memoir, Stanley Fish, who's a big Milton expert, among other things, and he's also sort of a pragmatist, empiricist, positivist, philosophically. And he actually, in a series of essays published in a book, argued that there is no theory to, for example, in baseball, to hitting the ball. You just do it. Well, that's philosophically wrong, factually wrong. There is a theory, and people do have to go from theory to practice and doing everything, including sports. You do have to develop concepts. It's not just the knowing and the doing are merged together as one thing. Yes, there's a dialectical relation, but it's a dialectical relation. It's not a linear identity. You knowing is doing and doing is knowing. You know, and you hear this even in the communist movement. Why do we have to talk about it all this time, all this stuff all the time? Why are we wasting our time here? Everybody knows what we have to do. Let's just go do it. No, you have to go, you know, to use that metaphor, up to the mountain and back down, and up to the mountain and back down. You have to go to theory. You have to go to abstractions from reality to form concepts. I mean, you do this in everyday life. For example, you would never allow someone to drive a car who'd never driven a car who said, driving is knowing how to drive. At least I hope you wouldn't. You know, that would be extremely dangerous. You would say, no, there are certain laws, if you will, certain particularities to the matter in motion that's involved in driving. You have to learn at least the basics of that and then go to practice with it and back to the theory till you get to where you can be set loose. I mean, a lot of the people out here should not be set loose. But at least, you know, in theory, they've learned the theory, so to speak. Well, that applies, as I said, to everything. You know, when a lot of things, see, when people, here's the thing that confuses people sometimes. Sometimes people have a whole philosophical system, but sometimes they get confused. Is, as I was speaking to earlier, when you learn the, you know, internal relations of something and its relation with other things, when you learn the quote-unquote laws of something, the dynamics of something, and you make a leap and a synthesis, you internalize that, then you do it in a way that appears to be automatic and spontaneous until new contradictions arise which pose new difficulties that can't be met by simply doing it that way. And then you have to go back and get more theory and come back again, which always happens in life. But there is a process there, you know. There's the process of going, you know, accumulating certain knowledge and then making a leap in everything. Children do that in learning how to speak. Now, they may have a capacity to speak, but they have to actually go through the process of learning and then making a leap, or in walking, and anything you can think about in life, everyday things. Learning is not doing. And doing is not learning. There is learning in doing and doing in learning, but they are not one and the same thing. It's not flat like that. It's not linear, straight line like that. It's up and down, if you will. It's qualitative leaps, it's syntheses, it's abstractions into conceptions. You abstract from reality to form conceptions. So, to go back to the particularity of basketball or any kind of sport, if a coach is not a bourgeois military martinet dictator or a drill sergeant or whatever, but is actually applying good methodology, and this too should be all the more true if you're a communist, but there could be plenty of good coaches who are not communists, and there are. That's another one of embraces but does not replace. But if you're actually a good coach, what do? You study the laws, the dynamics of what it is you're coaching. You study the opponent. You know, there's scouting in sports. You send an assistant coach if you can't go yourself, or you know, you have a division of labor, assistant coach goes and watches the other team play. Okay, How do they play against this particular opponent? What did this particular opponent seek to do against them? Who are the players on their team that are capable of doing what? Not capable of doing what? What do those players like to do? You know, they use the word in sports, tendencies. What are their tendencies? How do you counteract those tendencies of the individuals? How do you counter what the team likes to do as a team? How do you, as the phrase goes, take them out of their game? See, all these things are part of, that's theory. That's not doing, that's theory. And, you know, your own players, they come to you and they say, if you're a good coach, coach, you know, he or she will say to you, coach, I'm having a hard time with my free throw shooting. And assuming they're not Shaquille O'Neal, who's hopeless in this regard, then you say, okay, well, let's look at your technique. But not only your technique, let's, you know, what, there are certain mechanics. Are you bending your knees when you shoot a free throw? Because you actually, when you shoot the ball, you have to get your whole body into it, but in the right way. It's a little bit like serving in tennis. If you serve with your body straight and rigid, you can't get any power, and it's hard to get directionality, put the ball where you want it to go. So your whole body goes into it. When you serve in tennis, you bend your knees, and you rotate your hips, and you get your whole body, and that's where the power comes from. And then the arm and the snap of the wrist is just the finishing off. Well, it's true in basketball, too. When you're shooting a free throw, you have to bend your knees and put your whole body into it in the proper, with the proper momentum and the proper motion. A lot of times you see people, they've gotten down certain aspects of it, but then particularly when they're feeling the pressure, oh, yeah, right, you should take a deep breath. Okay, so they take a deep breath to relax. You should bend your knees. They bend their knees, and then they get up to shoot, and they stop. And all the purpose of bending their knees has been negated because their body is stiff again. And then they're just shooting with their arm, which means it's not as easy to have, you know, the right technique and to have the right effect and to get the right spin and all that. So maybe a player comes to you and says, I'm having trouble. Well, you go through them. Well, you know, are you relaxing? What's your mental attitude when you go to the free throw shooting is one of the most tense things in all sports. Imagine you're sitting, you know, in a big game with 20,000 people in the stands, all of whom are from the other team because you're playing in the opposing team's gym, and they're all waving things to try to distract you and yelling at you, and then all of a sudden, maybe they fall, you know, there's a hush comes, and then that throws you off. You know, are you blocking all this out? You know, are you focusing? Are you concentrating? I remember when that Houston team that I liked so much in college lost the game in the NCAA championships. The opposing team, North Carolina State, and its coach, Jim Valvano, had this whole strategy at the end of the game. You foul. If you're behind, you foul, make them win by shooting free throws. You foul, make them win by shooting free throws. And that's what they did. They overtook Houston because the Houston players tightened up in a big game like this. And I remember they showed in slow motion, and they fouled Clyde Drexler, and he made his two free throws. And then Valvano said afterwards, so we decided not to foul him anymore. And I watched him when he shot. They showed in slow motion when he shot his free throws. And you could actually see his eyes had completely blocked out everything else going on. And then there was a question of technique, but there was a mental element in that. A level of concentration where, you know, his eyes looked almost as if they were glazed over because he was consciously focusing and blocking all this other stuff out. It's not just there's, you know, 20,000 people there at the pit in Albuquerque, but there's, you know, millions of people watching on TV, which you're very aware of. And, you know, there's a lot riding on this. So is your mental attitude right? And then is your technique right? This is a coach is going to be discussing this. This is all theory. You know, then it goes back into practice, but it's all theory. Just because it isn't hard to understand necessarily doesn't mean it isn't theory. Not all. The definition of theory is not something that's hard to understand. You know, it may be hard to understand until you learn it, and then it's not so hard, and then there's something else, and then that's hard. But theory is abstraction from reality and concentration of that aspect of reality that you're, it's higher, as Lenin said, it's higher than reality. It concentrates more truth because you're making a synthesis. You're drawing together the essential aspects of the reality that you're perceiving and interacting with. So coaching involves theory. That's not the same thing as doing. So a good coach would be engaged in all these kind of things, scouting the other team, having ideological, effectively ideological discussions with his players, you know, or her players, if it's a woman coach, you know, having discussion with your players about, you know, their orientation toward the game, in certain sense, toward life. You know, the really good people, a lot of them say, well, you know, the reason that I can come through in the clutch is because I know it's a game. As important as it is, I know that this is not life, you know, in its entirety wrapped up in this game. That doesn't mean they don't feel the pressure, but they have a certain perspective, a certain ideological, if you will, orientation that a coach should also be involved. Now, the players do that on their own, too. But they do have to do the doing. And when they're doing the doing, it's not that they don't engage in the theory. They're all practice, the coach is all theory, no. But when they're engaged in doing, so to speak, they can't be at the same time paying the same kind of attention to theory. It doesn't mean they don't think about strategy when they're playing or during a timeout, or they don't think about technique, but they can't do it in the same way someone who's not immersed in the immediacy of a situation can do. And so that's the role of a coach. And this is why you will always, even in communist society, need institutions, and you will need people who play certain roles, but they will not be institutionalized as the expression of social divisions characteristic of class society, and therefore social antagonisms. But there's always a role for theory, and there's always a role for people who are abstracted from any particular and immediate situation or immediate act. To be able to get, you know, to go up to the mountaintop, to use that metaphor, to be able to look at the broad sweep of things and see how all this practical activity that's going on, how it's going, what it's running into, and what it's part of, and then raise ideas about what it should be part of and how it ought to go, etc. So that was the metaphor on the one level, literally and directly talking about coaching, but also it was meant to be metaphorical at the same time with its, you know, larger implications also being spoken to.